Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
This 10th year of Daily Tech News Show is made possible by its listeners. Thanks to all of you, including Jeffrey Zilks, Tony Glass, and Philip Less. Coming up on DTNS, why is Google's Bard having such a hard time keeping up? Atari beefs up its game title selection. And what does the future of AI mean for humanity? Researcher Ruby Justice Thello shares thoughts with us. This is the Daily Tech News for Thursday, April 20th, 2023. From Studio Redwood, I'm Sarah Lane.
In lovely Cleveland of the Ohio, I'm Rich Straffolino.
From Petaluma, I'm Megan Maroney.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
Megan Maroney, we're so glad to have you back on the show. Welcome.
I am glad to be back. It was nice to see your beautiful face and in real life. The last time I was on the show, we actually got to see each other and breathe each other's air. It was amazing.
We did. Megan and I saw each other IRL. It doesn't happen that often these days, turns out. And the rest of you, you know, we'll just stay remote. But before we get into the quick hits, real quick, Twitter has begun removing blue check marks from legacy verified accounts. Mine was included. I am no longer verified unless I want to pay $8 a month, which I don't. Twitter said it previously promised to do this, so not a big surprise, but you never know with Twitter these days. Let's get into more quick hits. The chip shortage from the last few years has done a bit of a 180. TSMC forecasts that chip revenue this quarter will be worse than expected due to drops in demand for its chips across sectors from phones to servers. TSMC says it expects a continued decline in the second quarter, then improvement coming in the second half of the year. But it's not just TSMC. Bloomberg reports that Taiwanese export orders dropped 25.7% in March, and orders for tech components like semiconductors fell 29.4%. That is the largest fall in 14 years.
Microsoft announced that starting April 25th, its multi-platform Smart Ads product will no longer include Twitter as one of the platforms. Now, unless you're running internet ads all the time, you'd be asking, what is that? The tool lets customers manage multiple paid ad campaigns, including on Google, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn from a single interface, and used to support Twitter too. Microsoft will also remove Twitter from its social media management tool for advertisers called Digital Marketing Center. The decision seems to be a response to Twitter's increased API fees.
Amazon announced that it launched its anti-counterfeiting exchange, or ACX, designed to help retail stores label and track marketplace counterfeits. This is part of Amazon's efforts to crack down on organized crime on its platform by mimicking data exchange platforms in the credit card industry to find scammers and then identify their tactics. Individual stores and Amazon marketplace sellers can both contribute information and record anonymously to flag counterfeiters in a third-party database, or use the database to avoid doing business with shady partners in the future.
Snap is releasing its My AI chatbot for free to all Snapchat users. The bot is powered by OpenAI's models and was previously available to paid Snapchat subscribers, Snapchat Plus subscribers. My AI can also be added to group chats by mentioning it, and you can change the name and use a custom Bitmoji for it as well if you just want to make it a little bit more personal. My AI does things like recommend filters or suggest places to visit. It'll soon get the ability to respond with images as well. At Snap CEO Evan Spiegel said he has used My AI to do things like create bedtime stories for his children, okay, and plan birthday activities for his wife. In other Snap news, they also opened their revenue sharing program for public stories content to all creators, as long as you have 50,000 followers and 25 million monthly views. It was previously limited to select creators. The share from these this share's revenue from ads that run between a user's stories content. And finishing up our trio of Snap news here at the Snap Partner Summit, Kara Swisher asked Evan Spiegel if he thinks TikTok should be banned. And he said, "We'd love that, but..." added it would be a dangerous precedent.
Google announced it merged its two main artificial intelligence research units, Brain and DeepMind, into a single unit, which will now be called Google DeepMind. The unit will be led by Demis Hassabis, who is the co-founder and CEO of DeepMind. Google purchased DeepMind for about $500 million in 2014, which sounds like a steal with numbers these days. All right, Rich, let's talk more about the future of AI.
The future and how it's going to be built on, right? Since Google opened up its Bard chatbot last month, comparisons to other chatbots, maybe specifically OpenAI's ChatGPT, have been less than kind, if you look at the aggregate. Now, Bloomberg sources say Google employees have been well aware of issues with Bard. There are some pretty juicy quotes in the piece, including someone calling the system a pathological liar and another calling it worse than useless. Generally, everybody was recommending Google maybe delay releasing it, or some engineers were saying maybe Google should delay releasing it. Google ended up still going forward. Of course, when it comes to Bard, ChatGPT, or really any other large language models or LLMs, these all require a massive corpus of text to train on. So what's in these data sets is pretty important. It's how LLMs learn what words to string together in response to a user query. If it's really smart autocomplete, it's how it figures out what to autocomplete. To understand these data sets better, the reporters at the Washington Post and researchers at the Allen Institute for AI analyzed Google's colossal clean crawled corpus, or much boringly referred to as C4 data set, which includes content from 15 million websites. Sarah, what were they looking at? What'd they find?
So looking at the site tokens, I'm only laughing because some of these naming conventions, we got to do something better than this. But okay, that's a different topic for another time. Looking at the site tokens, the Post found that the most frequently cited sites were patents.google.com, Wikipedia, and the subscription-only library Scribd. Google filtered this content before using it for training, using the open source list of dirty, naughty, obscene, and otherwise bad words. Basically, you know, just trying to get the bad stuff out of there so people don't get, unsavory content, or don't try to make it give them unsavory content. And there are other filters as well. However, the Post found hundreds of pornographic sites and other sites associated with things like hate groups that were escaping the filter. So, speaking of research, Megan, you've done a lot on this topic. So, of what we've laid out here, what stands out to you about what's being handled well versus what isn't?
Well, I am I'm super fascinated with this because it's the first time I've really felt like AI is about to steal my job, and it probably will. But what's fascinating about what the Washington Post looked at, they really looked deep into the words that the sites that these generative AI tools are using to produce this content. And it's amazing. And there's so many interesting things. And with AI, so often it's we're scared of the wrong things. First of all, the copyright symbol appeared more than 200 million times in the data set, which is just interesting to me because, if you've used any of this generative AI, it's not telling you that things are copyrighted. It's just giving you an essay on Twelfth Night or writing, a press release or just doing any of your work for you. And it's not saying any of it is copyrighted. Like you said, it's some sites that are questionable, Kiwi Farm, Stormfront, 4chan, those sites weren't blocked. And, you know, but some of the problems that they saw are just problems that have been around for, you know, decades when we're talking about like the internet. For example, like it could be blocking some non-sexual LGBTQ content, which I know like parental controls have been having that problem forever. Like someone mm-hmm. is honestly looking for like sexual health information and it's blocked because it's associated with those like that long list of dirty words or some, you know, faulty thing that they put in there. I think what's interesting too is not necessarily what data it's scraping, because a lot of this is just, I mean, it's Google. We're talking about Google, so they've been scraping this information for a long time, but it's how the AI is using it. So for example, like, I mean, some people are sometimes surprised to know that voter registration is public, but it's, you know, it is, it's public. You can look and see how, you know, what party people are affiliated with. Mm-hmm. But so scraping that info is one thing, but like then these models could use it in very unknown ways. Like if you ask for like, oh, I need a biography on Sarah Lane, like it might include your Democratic Party, you know, I mean, your part, your Democrat.
It's fine.
Whatever party, who knows, Sarah? Yeah. I don't know.
I know. You would never once guess. But yeah, no, that's a really good example though. And I think the fact that this is public data, so there's nothing inherently wrong with that, but then is it going to be used to describe me in another way, in a way where I was like, mm-hmm. Well, that's not, you know, I wouldn't have shared that kind of data willingly, you know, in a blog post or that sort of thing. But it's also, what a lot of people, myself included, are still wrapping their heads around is, you know, the data that is collected is not stored somewhere. You know, like these models aren't just like, amassing, you know, terabytes, petabytes of data. They're simply trying to learn what should probably be said about a particular person. For example, myself, maybe I lean in a certain way politically. Does that say something more about me based on the other data that has been collected? And that's what these models do.
Yeah. And then there's the kind of the whole other issue that we're, you know, and Megan, you were talking about this when we were talking about like data that's public, like voter registration. Very specifically over in Europe, the training sets for large language models are really becoming like a super big deal. You know, we've talked about on this show, you know, Italy is ordering OpenAI to stop processing data, and they have a deadline of April 30th. To meet some demands to make sure that they're not violating GDPR protections over there. And it's some pretty serious stuff. And we were talking about like potentially getting consent for people to have their data in those data sets or to scrape that data, meeting right to be forgotten rules, like really tricky stuff. And it's not, you know, it's not just the Italians on a lark here. Regulators in France, Germany, and Ireland are also looking into OpenAI data collection specifically. And in fact, the European Data Protection Board has set up a GPT-3 specific task force to kind of coordinate on this. So I don't think any of these are going away. And it kind of speaks to this idea that under GDPR and its protections, you know, there is kind of a difference between data that is public and data that can be, you know, kind of used just because it's public. I mean, it doesn't mean you can use it, you know, without consent. And it's a very different regime and a very, very different set of criteria that we're seeing in Europe for sure.
Mm-hmm. I think also just the fact that we don't know what the accuracy, like so many people, because the way the whole, like when you put something into ChatGPT or Bard, like it just, the way it like types it up, and it looks like magic, and it's, you know, you think it sounds right. And mm-hmm. so when you think about where this data comes from, like, so it ranked, the, you know, ranked all these sites in terms of subjects. So like in technology, Medium is ranked 56 in tech content. And, you know, full disclosure, I used to work for Medium. And that's part of how I know that most of it is unedited, unfact-checked, user-generated content. Like, it's mm-hmm. so, you know, there might be a lot on Medium that is from a very, you know, well-known source. It might, some stuff is fact-checked. Some stuff was edited, but not everything. And so, and I'm not sure that there's a way for this data set to really know in a way that it needs to, the way we're using it, to know what is accurate, especially if this is ranked as the 56 in tech content.
Well, and to that point, like, I was really surprised to see how much personal blogs in general, like, not, you know, like, just, you know, your everyday blog were scraped and used for this. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I'm sure there was a lot of content there, but again, that's like deeply personal. In some ways, that's performative in ways that you might not get from a news site or from Wikipedia or something like that. And that may, you know, again, all of these are put together to train these models to, you know, generate, predict what text is going to generate and give you like a desirable response. But the fact that that's so deeply personal stuff, and also not scraping like the major social media platforms, things like Facebook and Twitter, it gives it a very specific, I feel like, performative set also to build off of. And speaking of accuracy, yeah, I mean, that's the thing we keep having to repeat. It's like, these models have no idea that they're even like supposed to, like, accuracy is not the goal of them. It's the goal is to have like a convincing response. Like, accuracy is beside the point almost with these models in a lot of ways.
Yeah. The models don't care about accuracy. The models, the model doesn't know what that is. The model says, this is what I have to work with. And this is probably the sentence that makes the most sense based on what I have to work with.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, Medium, great example. I mean, not everybody is posting like super personal stuff on Medium. I'm a person who's posted some super personal stuff on Medium as of late, you know, like health things. I could have just made up a bunch of stuff. And would that be part of, the data that becomes something that it's trained on and spits out to somebody else, so that next person now is like, sounds like it's true. I mean, that happens all the time. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about AI and who to trust and who not to trust in just a sec. But just a reminder that you can join our conversation in our Discord. We'd love to have you there. You can join by linking to a Patreon account at patreon.com/DTNS.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
All right, on the latest episode of A Word with Tom Merritt, Tom talked with cyber ethnography researcher and writer Ruby Justice Thalo about humanity's place in an age of AI-enabled technologies. Where do we humans fit in? We have an excerpt from that conversation focusing on how people evaluate the veracity or truthfulness of information that they find on the internet. So let's listen in now.
I am very... The idea that you would get information and that information would be just 100% true is a very new thing. Mm-hmm. You know, usually if you grew up before the internet, your research wouldn't, you know, probably check a book or two to get some information. And there was some at least a little breadth in how we acquire knowledge. And we've been primed really to go on one place and go and find one piece of information and be like, okay, this is Wikipedia. This is true. I even remember when Wikipedia came out, the teachers being like, oh, don't trust Wikipedia. You still got to go to Encarta or whatever, the librarian.
Britannica or, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And that was a big thing because people were maybe, they didn't believe that they could be only a single source of truth, especially on the internet. And so I think we've carried over that assumption that if something that has the stamp of Microsoft or that is something we see on the news, why would somebody put something out that lies? You know, I don't think it's wrong to expect that as a consumer. Even if they say, oh, it's not always going to be correct. The last paper that I read, I think it was for the Lambda, the Google system, had about 80% groundedness, which means 80% veracity. Mm. You have similar things with GPT-3 and GPT-4. So 4 things out of 5 are going to be true. 1 out of 5 is going to be probably a hallucination, as they call it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a lot. Actually, no, when you think about it, that's a lot. 1 out of 5, but I think we expect on the internet to be served, at the very least, a semblance of truth. And if it's not truth, it's ideologically correct,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. No, that's a great point that I don't know what the average veracity of my average conversation with my neighbors is, but I wouldn't be shocked if it was around 80%. You know, I definitely hear people saying wrong things all the time. I know I've said things that I'm like, oh, that turned out to be wrong. But we're more forgiving in that interpersonal relationship than we are with the machine. And I was really fascinated by what you said about the authority, right? It's coming from a machine. We give it extra authority. Is that something we can get over? Is that something we just need to untrain ourselves from? Or is it just endemic and we need to adapt to it differently?
The truth of the matter is that we see the internet as this repository of knowledge. And when we ask a machine that is connected to the internet a question, we assume it can go and retrieve that information. That's one of the affordances of the internet is that a lot of knowledge is on it. And through Google, whatever, you can access that knowledge. I think it's, you know, speaking as a designer, it's a bit of a design flaw, right? In the same way that a cigarette package would have indication on, you know, what the risk or dangers might be. There may be some more salient features or more salient design as to the fact that it is a tool in testing. This is not a factual, you know, what the AI says is not factual. They say it a little bit, you know, it says in the fine print, it says a little, but it's not, it is not a prominent feature of the design of the interface of these programs.
It's not a habit for us yet. I guess that's what I'm wondering is like, can we turn it into a habit of like, oh no, that's a chatbot. Of course I don't trust everything it says.
There's something about also the maybe post fake news moment where these two things might converge and push us to a culture of double checking. Mm-hmm. We spend the last, you know, 6 since 7 years since, the election of Trump, just being well aware that things or the media or, by the way, that was the case before that as well, but it became salient in
the magnifying glass got put on it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. That the things we read were not always sure. And people became very adamant about, you know, CNN got the fact checkers and there's a whole choreography of people looking at things that people say to make sure that they were true. And potentially one of the positive effects of that is that if we identify as a culture that both the information we get from the media might be wrong and the information we get from the internet might be wrong and the information we get from AI chatbots might be wrong, might push us to a culture of double checking, verifying. But of course, the onus is on the user.
Yeah.
And the user is a person with limited amount of time. And one can assume that they will only check things that are super important to them.
That whole conversation just made me like, my handle is Mr. Anthropology. So that just talking about these tools being used in culture, like this whole conversation is just fantastic. But what got this really got me thinking is that to that point, I remember that in college too. I'd had professors tell me, like, in your bibliography, do not put Wikipedia. Do not even start with Wikipedia. Like, that was a moment when we as a, like, just even in an academic culture, we're learning to, like, how to use this resource of the internet at that time. And so to think about ChatGPT in that way, it can seem so disruptive, and it may very well be extraordinarily disruptive long term. But, like, this is also it, the same way a cell phone is, the same way a smartphone or computers or whatever. Like, these are cultural products that, like, it's going to take some time to do that. But this conversation kind of gave me, I don't know, some hope that, you know, like, culture is extraordinarily resilient to these sorts of things. I'm curious, Megan, like, what did this kind of get going in your brain?
Well, I mean, definitely made me think about how we just spent the last 15 minutes talking about how inaccurate it was, and, like, just the fact that, like, a lot is inaccurate, and it always has been. Before, like, I went to college long before Wikipedia, so, you know, we were checking, like, we were sourcing from books in the library, and I think
Dewey Decimal.
As a journalist, woo-woo. This,
yeah. Library,
like,
cons,
as a journalist,
please.
Like, I exactly. I mean, part of what I do every day is, you know, like, with my reporters, like, where did this come from? Where was this sourced? According to who? Like, you know, the job of a journalist is to collect facts and then put them together and, you know, tell the person what's important. And I feel like that is absolutely not what ChatGPT or any generative AI can do. Like, they just can't do that. So I think that that's what's scary, because it just feels like there's no sourcing, no one. So it's not necessarily the inaccuracy. It's the lack of saying where you got that fact, or, like, a journalist's name. The byline is there. You know, like, everybody knows the words I'm speaking, the words we're, you know, speaking on the show are all coming from us. And, you know, with it, just it, I don't know. I don't want to be all like, get off my lawn, ChatGPT, but that is kind of what I'm saying.
It is really interesting, though, that as we see this kind of generative AI get into industry, certainly, like, even just like the OpenAI integrations that we're seeing, these verticals that we're seeing with Microsoft stuff, we are seeing sourcing being much more important. Like, I still want to say ChatGPT is like the tech demo for how this stuff works. And, like, we're just starting to see, like, the idea of this at scale. And when we have seen this at scale, like, when we see it in business, in industry, we are like, and I'm not saying that this will in any way be perfect, or, and that we will not fall down on our faces on this, but, like, sourcing is a big part of that. Probably we need to do, I don't know, much better, but it is interesting to see that when, like, hey, it's being used for business, for specific business products, sourcing is at least a little bit part of that conversation that we're seeing right now.
Indeed.
Well, if you want to hear the rest of that interview, be sure to head on over to A Word Podcast, the letter A, wordpodcast.com, to get the full episode of A Word with Tom Merritt and his conversation with Ruby Justice Fellow. If you love Tom, you love him getting into deep conversations with cool people on fascinating topics, I have a feeling that you might, if you're listening to this show, probably want to check it out. I know I'd love it. Check it out.
I do too. I mean, this is Tom in his element, you know? Tom is great at this sort of stuff. You know who's also great at stuff? Atari. And that stuff is buying things back. The company announced it acquired more than 100 PC and console titles launched in the 1980s and the 1990s from companies like MicroPose, Infogrames, and Accolade, also adding Accolade's trademark to its vault. Now you might say, well, hold on, didn't some of these games, you know, weren't they already Atari games? Yeah, so Atari now owns the Demolition Racer series, Bubsby, Hardball, and some of these were Atari titles at one point. IP has moved around, companies buy things from other folks, so it's a coming home of sorts. Last month, Atari also snagged Night Drive Studios and the IPs of 12 Stern Electronics arcade classics, including Berserk and Frenzy. Atari plans to re-release already existing games on modern consoles and create new adaptations of past storylines. Who's into it?
I love this idea that Atari is this very specific, like, amalgam, like, it's this aggregator of IP that had value in a very, it feels like a very narrow window. I know some of these titles go into the 90s, but, like, you know, when you're thinking like Hardball or you know, Demolition Racer, that kind of stuff, like, seems like a very specific amount of time. They're like, this is our lane. This is what we're going to do. If people think Atari, they think of a wood paneled console that was sitting under your giant CRT TV. So, like the name Atari is so synonymous with that. I think it's smart that whatever the incarnation of this company, it's kind of doubling down on that. That makes sense.
It's like the vinyl community, right? Like Atari's kind of like, listen, we know that some of you, not all of, not every gamer, but many gamers, especially of a certain age, really care about this stuff. There's nostalgia. It invokes emotion, and to have it under the Atari umbrella makes a lot of sense to me. All right. Well, let's check out the mailbag and see what y'all have been saying. We got one from Samir. This is based on our conversation about AI and drones helping kill weeds in farms yesterday with Scott Johnson. Samir says, first time feedbacker. So thank you, Samir. Please do, keep it up. Samir says, I think a great use for this tech in your last episode would be to spray paint where spots are found, or to clean buildings outdoors, glass or otherwise, where needed. Samir's obviously talking about the idea that the precision of a, drone that is trained on how a farm would work could also work for, like a skyscraper or, a building that needs just a little bit of paint. The whole thing doesn't need to be painted, but just a little bit of paint. And that's a really good, use case for this as well.
Send out the paint drones. Yeah, I kind of love that. The other thing I really love is Stephen wrote in, and he had some thoughts about AI and using it for accessibility. And so he wrote in and said, I'm blind, and I use audio descriptions where available. However, due to licensing issues and the fact that it's a very niche area, the amount of content somewhat limited. There is a surprising amount of content with audio descriptions available, he says, to be fair. Sometimes it's available, but not on a particular platform, or maybe just this time around. For example, he says, you could find a film with audio descriptions on one streaming platform 1 year, and then it goes away, and when it comes back, doesn't have it anymore, and vice versa. So my plan was to see how well AI, ChatGPT in this instance, would do well at writing descriptive scripts for a blind audience. He did some testing. How'd it go? He said his first attempt, not bad. Missed all of my favorite bits, but still not bad at all. And then in his second attempt, he said ChatGPT did the thing where it just makes stuff up, but I think I like the AI version better. So, all right. So maybe we could feed that into, once we have text to video, we can feed the good one that ChatGPT did, and then we can get a video. And then the snake will fully eat itself.
Well, text to video exists, but yes,
yeah, I'm sorry,
has a long way to go.
Yeah,
long way to go.
When we're covering the first feature film next year, I'll.
That's right. Yeah. Was this really Michael Mann, or was it AI? No one knows yet. Let's hear from the director himself. While we're waiting for that to happen, we want to thank you, Megan Maroney, for being with us on the show today. Let folks know what you're up to these days.
Well, I am freelancing mostly, and I am working currently at HR Brew, which is part of Morning Brew, a newsletter company. My content that I'm editing is mostly about workplace issues. So anybody who is in HR or is like a, kind of working in a company where you're the person in charge of dealing with all of the issues of return to work and, just everything,
which are many. Yeah.
Whether you should use ChatGPT and it for work, all those things. So, check it out. I think, you would like it. There's lots of GIFs.
Ooh.
Also GIFs.
Also known as GIFs.
GIFs.
Either way, I'm sold.
Yeah, listen. Our brand new bosses, of which there are three, who might say GIF or JIF, we don't know yet, but what we do know is that they are Ernest, Adonis, and Bede. And they just started backing us on Patreon, and that really made our day. Thank you, Ernest. Thank you, Adonis. Thank you, Bede.
And Adonis, Ernest, and Bede, and all our other patrons, remember to stick around. I implore you for our extended show, Good Day Internet. We'll be talking about BuzzFeed News, pouring some out for it because it's shutting down, and how that plays into other recent newsroom shutdowns. So stay tuned.
Just a reminder, you can catch our show, DTNS, is live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC. And you can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We're back doing it all again tomorrow with Len Peralta drawing the top tech stories and Rob Dunwood talking tech with us. Don't miss it.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.